Hi, everyone. This is Richard Rupp, and I want to really welcome you to this second edition of the Rupp Report. I want to thank everyone who listened to the first episode. If you haven't listened to it, I really welcome you to listen to it. We did a 2024 year in review of Canadian federal politics. We've had, you know, thousands of listeners on all these different platforms, Spotify, Apple, so many different platforms. And I really want to thank you because a lot of people have reached out to me and have really given me positive feedback. And so that's why I'm here with Mike, my producer, for a second episode. The episode today is going to really be a 2025 look forward for what Canadian politics has in store. And if you've been following the news, which I'm sure most Canadians have, there's a lot in store for us this year. This is going to be a very exciting federal year for us. So if you enjoyed this episode and you've enjoyed the last episode, I please ask you to subscribe, to follow our channel, and to keep informed of updates, because we're going to be giving a lot of regular updates on this podcast now about what's happening in 2025 Canadian federal politics. And as I said, this is going to be a really paramount year for Canada. I think it's a watershed year. So I want to introduce my producer, Mike Wixon. Mike?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, my friend. Thank you for being here.
How are your holidays?
They were fantastic. I had a great holiday, and now, you know, with Trudeau stepping down, although only as Liberal leader, not as Prime Minister, that's something I want to clarify for the audience, and we'll talk more in depth about that. We're getting to a better Canada. Let's put it that way.
Okay. I'm going to be dead honest with you. What the Prime Minister did was nothing.
Absolutely. Correct.
In fact, he did worse than nothing.
He did worse.
He inflicted us with a state of nothingness.
Correct. So just to make an explanation that people may not understand, if you follow me on LinkedIn or if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see my comment, which I think a lot of people appreciated right after his statement. And the basic things are, it's 3 points. One, he stepped down only as the leader of the Liberal Party. He is still the Prime Minister today. He's still the Prime Minister tomorrow.
He's also still the leader of the Liberal Party.
He's still the leader of the Liberal Party until they have a leadership election.
Somebody has been elected in a robust competitive election.
Well, this is the thing. We don't know the rules that they have set out yet, right? We're still waiting for the rules for them to put it out. What is the rules? What's the time frame? What's it going to take? Who's putting their names forward, etc.? So we're really in the early stages. So the first thing is, he's still the Prime Minister. He hasn't stepped down. He still controls the lever of Parliament. But you're right. He did make it worse for us because he prorogued Parliament till March 24th. The reason he did that is not, you know, it's completely selfish. He would have prorogued it longer if he could. But Parliament needed to come back in order to do a spending bill so that the Treasury Board can release funds. It's a little bit complicated, but that's why it's till March 24th. It's not just an arbitrary date that he picked. The second thing is that by doing this, what Canadians may not understand is it puts to bed all committee work, all parliamentary work, all legislation that was on the table is now zero. It's basically thrown out and would have to now be introduced in the next parliament. As well, on top of that, all this stuff we were talking about as conservatives bringing to committee a vote of non-confidence, which would then be debated on the House floor, he shut us all down.
Yeah.
That's been shut down. So there's none of that. So he knew that he was going to face a non-confidence vote. He knew that eventually the government would fall.
No, the prince pushed pause.
That's exactly what he did. A big pause to March 24th.
It's absolutely an insufferable, egotistical move. It's something
shocking for such a non-egotistical person.
It was really out of character, wasn't it? Now, look, I have to say, I do think that it was a self-serving move in a lot of ways, just like everybody says. But I think even more disturbing is it says a lot about how our electoral constitution works.
Correct, unfortunately.
That the governor general will allow our prime minister to push pause on a country that is faced with embarrassment to the south over our borders and immigration, have trade issues internationally over energy and resources that we have a plentitude of,
right,
and unbelievable housing problems, unbelievable economic problems,
right,
to be able to just also push pause at that moment for the sake of your party, if I was a party member, I would feel embarrassed.
Well, I've always said, there's a few things that I've always said about this. Number one is that the Liberal Party of today with Trudeau or Team Trudeau or whatever they want to call it is not the Liberal Party of Chrétien or Martin. It's very much a cult of personality of Justin Trudeau, and it's become a cult. So I think that they should be incensed, but I wonder if Liberal members really are incensed or they're just cheerleaders for this princeling of Canada. That's the first thing. The second thing is you have to understand one of the weaknesses, and I must underline this, one of the weaknesses in our system, our Westminster British-based system. In the UK, there is a monarch, right? There's a King Charles or Queen Elizabeth II before, and the prime minister gets elected, and the monarch allows the prime minister to rule in his name. But in Canada, as one of the colonies, because we're still a constitutional monarchy, the prime minister is the one who picks the governor general, and the governor general represents the monarch. So it's kind of backwards that the person above the prime minister constitutionally is the governor general, and yet the prime minister picks the governor general.
Yeah, no, it really is a circle. It is so token and meaningless at this moment, and that we've allowed that to be any front to Canadians is very sad, I feel. They should have been made to run to the election.
Yeah, he should have.
Taken a non-confidence vote in the House on the chin like really was deserved. That's my personal opinion. What it does, though, is, like you say, it gives Canadians a glimmer of hope. Right away, of course, Trump invited us to be the 51st state.
Right. Well, he's been talking about that for a while, and Governor Trudeau and things like that. And then we have Kevin O'Leary.
The problem is this guy talks things into reality somehow. One day I'll be the president. No, you won't, Donald. Oh, my God, he's the president. Oh, my God, we're the 51st state. What happened? He has that ability.
He and many Canadians, if you talk to them, they're very interested in that idea. I mean, you got Kevin O'Leary going on television. I disagree with some of his points, but I think Kevin O'Leary needs to have an education on what is NAFTA and USMCA, because he's talking about we should have a common free trade agreement with the United States. And actually, he may not realize, but we do have a free trade agreement with the United States and Mexico. So, you know, we're good with that. We do enjoy our sovereignty as well as Canadians, and there is a bit of a difference between us and our American cousins, although I have a lot of respect for the American electoral system that they have, which we wouldn't have had this kind of a problem if it was an American system versus the Canadian system.
Well, it would work better for us with the limited population we have. The U.S. the Electoral College seems to be problematic in the States based on the sheer number of votes and populace in certain areas, adding weight, right? I think in Canada, you're right. We would have a pretty even distribution of electoral power that way. Certainly Quebec would be evened out. I often feel that they're overrepresented.
Right.
Ontario is another one that feels overrepresented in some places and underrepresented in others. If there was a way to do it based on populace, I noticed that there was a lot of riding changes proposed recently.
Right. So let me explain that to the public, because they may not understand that. Every 10 years, a non-governmental body, like a nonpartisan body, goes through the census, and they look at population changes because they want to have the ridings evenly spread out. And as population grows, we may need to add more ridings. So originally, we had 338 ridings. And then every 10 years, they look at the census. Now in the next election, we'll have 343. So we added 5 new ridings. City of Toronto lost 1 riding. Some other areas that are more conservative gained ridings because their population has increased. Some areas in the GTA have had extra ridings. So GTA, if you don't know, it's the Greater Toronto Area. So this is really based on population, and it's to even out the number of people, constituents that each MP represents.
Right. And there are some that are just enormous that I think probably the splits could be. For example, in the neighborhood where we're recording right now, Etobicoke Lakeshore is massive. It's got to be one of the largest ridings in Canada.
Well, you'd be surprised. There are some rural ridings that literally take days to traverse because the population is so small.
Of course, yeah.
Right? So yeah. They're very big. Like in Northern Ontario, there's some humongous ridings.
I meant just in the numbers Toronto. Numbers of constituents.
Oh, in the number of constituents. Yeah absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's still even room to work that.
Sure.
It became an opportunity. Let me ask you a couple of questions about your opinions on the response to this. First of all, do you think there's a legacy that is going to be lost on any of these committee fronts, on any of these, sort of institutional or trade opportunities that Trudeau was working on that are going to be left behind? Any of those come to mind?
I really don't know what Trudeau was working on other than this Canada-US committee that he said that he's going to chair. There was committee work on a number of different things. I mean, there were changes to the Income Tax Act and things like that, which are now dead on the table. They're gone because right. Parliament's prorogued. The thing really is those bills can be reintroduced. Or if Parliament falls, they could again be reintroduced in the next legislature. But I think in the next term, it'll be hopefully a Pierre Poilievre-led government with the Conservatives.
Where are we with an election now? I'm completely lost.
So our best estimate is that, well, let me explain the procedure first. So March 24th happens. Mm-hmm. Parliament reopens. Because it's gone down to zero, it has to open with a throne speech, a new throne speech. My gut is that Trudeau is going to give everything, including the kitchen sink, in his throne speech. It will be his, Trudeau or whoever the new next Liberal leader is. Let's say the Liberals. So the Liberals will give everything in their throne speech. They might have a new leader, in which case they think that they are basically putting a new coat of paint onto the party and reintroducing it as a reno. But it's the same old party with the same broken bones and the same problems and the same cultish woke ideology.
New t-shirts, maybe.
Maybe new t-shirts. They scratch out the Team Trudeau and just have Team whoever.
Team Carney.
Team Carney could be no. Team Freeland, Team WEF.
Do you want to place anybody. A bet right now on who it's going to be?
The question is, who do I want it to be?
No, but I mean, who do you think it's going to end up being?
You know, I really think it's going to be one of maybe three or four people. So if caucus chooses, I think maybe they would choose Dominic LeBlanc because he's a preferred and friendly person. And there are many people in caucus that still like Chrystia Freeland, but then there's others that think that she stabbed Trudeau in the back, so they may not like her. I think a lot of the core party supporters of the Liberal Party would vote for Chrystia Freeland.
Wow, that shocks me a lot.
I think Chrystia Freeland would be the best choice in an election, speaking as a Conservative.
Wow, you just really want the Conservatives to make a plowing of this.
Well, I think, you know, she has to wear the disaster of the financial disaster that she was part of from day one.
Mark Carney doesn't factor in on this to you?
So Mark Carney has launched a website. Mark Carney is lobbying for it. You know, there are some concerns. Okay, here's the pros and cons. Mark Carney can argue that he is a knowledgeable economic person because he was the Bank of Canada governor and the governor of the Bank of England. So they could say that the central bankers like him and he understands the economy and he could weather Canada through this storm. The problem with Mark Carney is that aside from his deep connection with the WEF and the fact that he's really carbon tax Carney, he is a radical environmentalist that really believes deeply in this whole carbon tax, climate change, which can be, you know, different scientists. Maybe some people.
Nobody's winning votes on that in Canada right now. I mean, take a look at social media just to start with.
Well, I think people have started to realize that it's not just a carbon dioxide issue and that we need carbon dioxide in order to grow plants, grow food so that animals can eat and we can eat both animals and plants.
Right.
The other thing is with carbon tax Carney is he comes off as too intellectual and arrogant, and he's like a new Michael Ignatieff. So he's like, it's almost, he's just visiting Canada. And then you have the issue with carbon tax Carney that he has moved his, or his company has moved their headquarters over to New York, and he's just in for the ride. But as I said, he did launch a website, and I think he's one of the definite contenders, and he will have some big supporters behind him.
Let's talk about the next potential opportunity here in Canada for Canadians, an entirely new, I would imagine they're going to sweep a lot of Canada in the next election. What do you think of Poilievre and what is happening with the Conservatives right now?
Well, the polls are incredibly good for the Conservatives, but I always take everything with a grain of salt. Now, it'll depend who the next Liberal leader is. And the polls may be generous, saying that there's a 20 to 24% spread between the Liberals and the Conservatives. That may be less than 24%. We don't know. Is there going to be a supermajority? I think nonetheless there is going to be a majority, and Pierre Poilievre will be the next Prime Minister of Canada. I think Canada, the pendulum has swung the other way. People are tired of the Trudeau Liberals. People are tired of the woke ideology. For 10 years now, it hasn't given any gains to people. People are paying more at the pumps, more carbon tax on their home heating. They're paying more for food. They're paying incredibly more for housing, whether it's mortgages or rent. And people are being squeezed. The job opportunities aren't there. The economy is just not healthy. So I think there's a lot of reasons that people are, the pendulum is just going to swing the other way. So yes, I am very positive about it.
But that also leaves Poilievre in a position of immediate forgiveness. You know, Trump got this as well. Immediately we forgive anything that Trump might do badly just to get the guys out of the office who are currently there. The same thing's happening here in Canada. What we're left with is Poilievre. Now, I have a couple of observations I'd like to ask you about, if I may.
I'd love to hear that.
He has a lot of complaints with the current government. They're highly entertaining in the House of Commons if you are anti-Trudeau.
Okay.
He does an amazing job bandstanding and grandstanding about how badly Trudeau is doing. However, I've yet to really see any evidence of his party or him in particular doing anything positive in any community except shining a light on the bad parts of the opposing government and the current prime minister. What is he up to? What's he going to do?
So I think that's a brilliant question. And you have to understand how our parliamentary system works. The levers of power are held by Trudeau and backed up by Singh. The leader of the official opposition is there to hold the government to account. So he has no levers of power to actually make changes to make things better until he becomes the governor. Government. Yeah. Okay. So I get what you're saying.
No, but they all hold positions
in committee
and to their constituents back home.
They hold, yes, they do. But the actual money or the actual benefits that go to the constituents all flow through the government. So that's Trudeau and his cabinet. That's the Liberal Party. And it's backstopped by Singh, or else the government would have fallen already. So Conservatives only have so much they can do. They can put forward ideas, which they have, which is axe the tax, right? Get rid of the carbon tax, bring back the jobs, stop the crime, build the homes. Those are the ideas.
Okay, that's all rhetoric. What's the plan? And I've never seen one come out of Poilievre's mouth.
Well, I think you need to listen a little more closely to what he was saying. So, for example, we know that the media is very biased and paid for by Trudeau. So he's going to defund the CBC. He's going to make an even playing field so that all media have to play on the same field. They don't get these, not the left-wing media gets certain bailouts. Then take some of the government buildings and reconfigure it into housing. That's part of a housing solution. But also another thing is, whereas Trudeau is giving free money to the municipalities, which they're not using to build housing, Poilievre has spoken very clearly. He wants to give the money to the cities with a quota basis that the cities have to build a certain number of units not the cities themselves, but they have to allow the zoning and the approval process so that builders can go out and build a certain number of units and a certain number of doors, depending on the population, depending on the city. And if the city does do that and achieve its quota, then they will get money from the federal government. So it's there's an expectation there that they have to achieve something. Then by reopening are now frozen.
I wonder, okay, so let's stop there. Okay. I wonder if the cities, for example, give a tinker's boob whether or not this program's in place. You're telling me I've got to change all my zoning. I've got to go to neighborhoods and say, we're going to make accessible housing in your backyard. I, as a city, have to undertake all of this rezoning. And then if I do it, then I can have money from the federal government. Not a city's going to do it.
It's not so hard as that. What the problem is, there's a lot of cities now that have made excessive development charges on the homes, which multiplied from what they were 20 years ago.
Yeah. Like,
it's very huge. So it's really increased the cost of the housing. But more importantly, they don't have to rezone everything. What it is the cities are now making, say for example, the city of Toronto is making it very, very difficult for anyone to get a building permit.
Right.
You have to go through so many hoops.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to say is streamline your process. Allow the applications, allow people to apply without having to go through a million hoops and have to hire all these lawyers and accountants and planners in order to get the process approved and start building. And then you're going to get money back. What Trudeau is doing, he's just giving money to the cities, taxpayer money to the cities, and they're taking it because they need the money.
And where are they putting it? We don't know.
Well, that's the thing. They're not doing it to promote building and construction. If anything, they're slowing down the construction process by making too many obstacles to the building process, too many regulations.
I think I make my point too hard, to be honest with you.
No, it's a fair point. You do hear it. You do hear it. So I wanted to explain that to you. There are policies that he's putting forward. People may not be hearing it, but also the media is not out there giving him a microphone to say, here, tell us about all your great policies.
They are now.
They have to now.
And so now.
But generally, they don't.
Now he had better be out there with some very specific ideas that Canadians can back.
And he is. And he has been for the last. And this is why you see his rallies are so huge. Hundreds and thousands of people are going to Pierre Poilievre rallies. They're meeting with him. They're listening to what he has to say. And there's a lot of ideas that they're coming up with. So one of the things that I was trying to say, another thing that can help the economy, Trudeau has completely frozen out our oil and natural gas sector. Okay. And just as Trump says, drill, baby, drill, we want to reopen. Under Harper's time, we had a great economy because we were really booming with our oil and natural gas, and we were a net exporter. We weren't a net importer. Why are we bringing oil in from troubled places in the world when we have our own natural resources right here?
Wait, Richard, we have windmills.
Well, we have windmills, and I actually drove by one today, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, sure, if you want to kill seagulls, and then what happens?
It's a big scarecrow.
It's a big scarecrow 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road when the mechanics collapse. What are you going to do with it? I mean, these are not really, really good solutions.
Not exactly a win, those were.
Not a win.
See what I did there?
You were smart. I like that.
So I wanted to just illustrate that I think now is that opportunity that as you, first of all, NDP, I need to ask you about the NDP's future.
Sure.
Are they still a party?
So here it really depends on March 24th. Singh has spoken and written that he will vote non-confidence against his government. Now the question is really up to him. Once the government reopens. So back to what I was saying is once there's a throne speech, they have to vote on that throne speech. The throne speech is a confidence motion in and of itself. It's like a budget. So Trudeau or whoever the Liberal leader is going to put everything, including the kitchen sink, as part of their platform for the next election, give things away for free that they know they could never afford, but it's going to sound too good to be true. The thing is Singh going to now honor his word and vote against it and collapse the government? I think he has no choice, because if he leaves it till October, then people are going to say, why do I vote for the NDP? I need a difference. I need to vote for something different than Trudeau.
They are kind of like the lightning rod a little bit when we need them in this country.
Sure. I think the NDP has a good heart. I think that they just don't understand basic economics. I always admired the NDP. Like, they do care in general. I think they care for less underserved and less privileged people. And I think we need that in our society. They just don't understand basic economics. Conservatives care for hardworking people and underprivileged people as well. We just go about it a different way. Okay. We want to give people opportunity and less regulation. The NDP wants to regulate everything and have government control your life from birth to death.
Somebody once told me that if the conservatives really do a good job, then the next election, you kind of need the NDP to tone things down.
Well, I think, you know, the NDP is great. I always view the NDP kind of like a moral conscience to our society. And so I like them. I think that we would be better off if we choose more of a closer to a two-party system, and it was the conservatives and the NDP, which would be more analogous to the Republicans and the Democrats in the states.
Right.
The liberals kind of try to play all sides. And you even saw it in Trudeau's speech when he left. If anyone who listened to his speech, he was talking about how he wanted to do proportional representation. Sure, of course he wanted to do that, because if anyone understands the methodology of proportional representation, you vote for your top two or three parties, and eventually the liberals would be permanently in office forever, because some people vote conservative, some people vote NDP, but a lot of people will vote liberal second, and so that will raise them up and they will get that 50%.
If they added two more parties to that list, maybe we would have something.
Yeah, but then we would have Europe. We would have the situation they have in Europe, where it's a coalition, multiple coalition governments, and coalition governments fall and collapse. I think the system we have in North America is more stable in general. Right now, it's not, you know, because we had an anomaly, which was Trudeau. I mean, Trudeau was not even like his father.
Do we hear from your handsome prime minister ever again, or does he just fade into the distance at this point?
You know, if I never have to hear Trudeau's voice or see his face, white face or black face or whatever, it really doesn't.
Have you seen the montage going around?
Yes, yeah, of course.
It's very embarrassing. I mean,
it's very honest, too. you know, if I never have to hear his voice again, that would be a wonderful thing. I'm sure he's going to try to get his globalist friends to, you know, give him some position. I mean, he's been angling for those kind of positions for a long time.
Well, he's got to be worth something. I mean, he must be.
He's worth a lot.
$100 million.
Sure. His grandfather was a very wealthy man, owned gasoline stations, petrol stations. The father was a very wealthy man and Prime Minister of Canada. He is the eldest son, very wealthy himself. His brother, Sasha Alexander, is a dilettante making movies for the Iranian regime. I mean, yeah, I mean, the one out of the family, it's not a Trudeau, but the son of Margaret Trudeau from her second marriage, Kyle Kemper, is actually one that I admire, because even though politically we may not view things along the same lines, but he speaks truth to power and he's a very educated person. He's probably far more educated than Justin is.
Well, he points that out often, actually, in his posts.
And he should. And he should.
He does seem like kind of a well-rounded guy.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know if we covered everything, but I know this. Again, next week, we'll be back here with a roundup on what's going on. Anything else you want to cover off?
I think that's great. I think, you know, let's see what happens in the next week. Let's see if the Liberal Party comes. Here's what we can look forward to, guys. Let's see if the Liberal Party comes up with rules for their membership and for their leadership convention or whatever they're going to have. Let's see what time frame they have. And in the meantime, government is frozen until March 24th, and we'll see what throne speech they have. So in the next few weeks, we're going to have a lot to talk about as things progress towards reopening Parliament and ideally a motion of non-confidence that will dissolve this Trudeau government and, you know, go to an election, which the Canadian public wants an election. My prediction, I'll leave the last thing to say. We are predicting that if the throne speech fails and there is non-confidence in the government, we're probably going to be having an election sometime in May. So get ready for it.
All right. There you go. Thanks. I appreciate this.
Thank you, everyone. Please like and subscribe. If you're listening through whatever platform, Spotify, Apple, it's iHeartRadio. I mean, we're on 20 different platforms. Please subscribe and follow, and you'll get updates of our next episodes. And I look forward and thank you all for the positive comments that everyone has given. It's motivated me to continue putting out episodes like this and giving people an inside opportunity to know what's going on in the Ottawa circle. Thanks, everyone.